Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
What's up, nerds? This is Just a Couple of Arslings, the Last Kingdom podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jessica Toomer.
And I am Melissa Fixie. We are writers for Sci-Fi Wire's Fangirls who started recapping The Last Kingdom in Season 3, so we decided to bring that nerdy, horny energy to Podcast Landia. Jessica, hello!
Hey. So, here's the deal. We decided to, like, start off these episodes, these podcasts, with just like a little bit of small talk, just to kind of like ease us in, because we're dealing with some heavy stuff, like Vikings killing each other and political betrayals, and like we don't want to just throw everyone into the deep end.
Mm.
That being said, we do not have interesting lives.
Hey, I mean, you're right. It's fine.
Like, I think we should be upfront and honest about that. We're not the coolest of people. And also, like, our time is being so consumed by this show at the moment that, like, we're not even plugged into, like, you know, just everyday things that other people are talking about.
Because all talking about is Uhtred and his adventures.
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking about Finan and Uhtred and, you know, haircuts and, like, the important things, the things that matter in life.
Right.
But, yeah, so I feel like we should just start, like, putting random words into a hat and, like, drawing out a piece of paper and be like, okay, let's riff on this for, like, 5 minutes. Because I mean, trying to come up with our small talk. I know, because trying to come up with our small talk is making me, like, feel really depressed about, like, myself and how not plugged in I am.
You know, I think it might be one of the hardest parts of this is coming up figuring out what to do for small talk. And so I'm just going to dive into it and tell you a little bit about my day, because it was a lot.
It was a lot.
So we're recording this at, you know, late in the evening. We were supposed to record this morning, but I was smacked down by the hand of Mercury in retrograde yet again. Mm. And I took my car in to get a oil change, and I thought it was going to be like half an hour. I made an appointment ahead of time. It was going to be $40 in and out. Well, I get there and I've been sitting in the waiting room for a while, and the mechanic comes in. He's like, I need to show you some stuff. And I was like, no.
That's like, that's the mechanic version of like, we need to talk.
Right. 100%. Like, the tests came back and they're not good. And so what I really appreciated, though, is I feel like it's hard to bring your car in as a woman because men can be very patronizing, especially if you're a young woman. But these guys were actually really nice. They like walked me through everything and like showed me each specific part that needed to be replaced. And so I appreciated that. What I did not appreciate was that it ended up costing me $485 to replace my brake pads and my belt when I thought it was going to be like 40. So it was a day. And I'm so grateful to have a car that works. And I'm glad that it was like found like this and not, you know, breaking down on the highway when I drive to Atlanta tomorrow. But like, I did not expect it. It was not ideal.
Come on, universe.
Come on.
Yeah, no. I feel like car, it's such a like, so I've been on both sides. I lived in New York for like 5 years and took, you know, public transportation.
Right.
Now I live down south. And so, of course, you have to have a car. There's, you know, benefits and like cons to both. But I feel like, so you have the freedom when you have a car, like you have the freedom to go wherever you want, whenever you want. You're not waiting on schedules like bus schedules or subway schedules. You're not like crowded into a subway car with other people. It's your own thing. But then it's also up to you to like pay all this extra money. It's so much more expensive. It's hard to like know which is better. But I will say that I bought like a new car when I came down here and I got a Jeep.
Yeah.
And like that thing has been so reliable, so good. I think there are brands of cars that are better than others, obviously. And I feel like I picked a good one because I haven't had many problems. That being said, I did I have a horror story.
Yes.
Because every car owner has a horror story.
Everyone.
And it involved almost missing. And Alyssa, you know that this is terrifying for me. It involved almost missing opening night of Hustlers.
No.
With J-Lo.
No.
Yeah, because I had a nail in my tire and my tire was going flat on the road.
No.
And so it's pouring rain. It's actually cold outside, which was weird because it's like middle of summer, basically. And it's been so hot down here. But it was pouring rain. I was already late. Like the previews were playing. That's how late I was.
Yeah.
And so I had to pull into a Walmart, which is like my worst nightmare. I get anxiety attacks just walking into a Walmart.
It's too many people.
Too much stuff.
It's a sensory overload.
Like, no offense to the people that go to Walmart. I just can't deal with it.
Yeah.
And I had to get that, like, you know, the air in a can, or like it's like a tape, and I don't know. I called my dad. I'm not like too like feminist to admit that I needed my dad's help.
Right.
And I'm just sitting there in the rain, like trying to patch up this tire so I could go see J-Lo on a pole.
I mean, she made it worth your while if you made
it. It was worth it.
Right.
But, it was worth
oh,
it.
Oh, man.
But it was terrifying. So like, yeah, I get it. I think, God, cars are so difficult. And I wish... The one thing I wish, like, in school was that someone would have told me, like, don't take that home economics class. Go take that shop class.
Yeah.
Where you can learn about cars.
Yeah. I really feel like there should be, like, a practical life skills class taught in school to, like, all right, here's how you do your taxes. Here's how you change a tire. Like, practical things that sometimes your parents teach you, sometimes they don't. Sometimes you just have to kind of figure it out. And you know what? Like, we can take one less math class. I don't know. I feel like that's a real detriment to modern education.
Am I ever
going to
use, like, Algebra 2 in my everyday life?
Literally never.
I'm in some kind of mathematics field?
Literally never.
How often will I need to know how to write a check? Pretty damn often. Okay?
Right.
Like,
right.
I think there's a changing, like, of the generations, and, like, so we don't need these classes, like intro to computers. Like, kids don't need that.
Right.
We know. There are things that we've kind of outgrown, they're outdated, and we don't know, and that's what we need, like, to be taught. So, this is, like, this has spiraled into a criticism of our education system.
You know what? It's fine. We didn't know what we were going to talk about, so we're just going with it.
But here it is. You know what? We're saying fuck it and get your act together, United States education system, because I should know how to patch a tire.
Right.
And I didn't.
There you go. All right. I think that's fine.
I think we did our part.
I think we nailed it.
You guys should be nice and warmed up.
Ready
so
to talk about betrayal.
It.
Let's do it.
All right, episode 5, season 3.
Yeah.
We're halfway through, and shit is going down.
Yeah, it's really, this one kind of starts, like, right away. You know, I mean, there's the rumor that Alfred is dead sort of spreading through the Danish camp, and Brita's super stoked about that because she thinks Alfred's a turd. She's made that super clear. And so she goes looking for Ragnar, and instead of finding, you know, handsome, virile Ragnar, ready to share in her joy, he is dead in his bed without his sword.
Ragnar, Ragnar, the only man amongst you is dead! Who did this? Cowards! All of you!
It is the worst. It's an ice-cold slap of reality. She was bringing him, like, pancakes in bed with this news of
great
Alfred
news.
Possibly shitting himself. Her reaction to it is very, it broke me. I mean, literally, my body is in half. My heart is crushed. Like, Brita is just so kind of overwhelmed with her grief and kind of unbelieving, I think, too. I think it's that, like, she's very sad. She's, like, practical enough to realize, like, he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also can't believe that he died this way. That's what makes it so unbearable.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, having Ragnar die without his sword in his bed, it's such a dishonorable way to die. And it's not how he lived, you know, like that's not the death that he deserved. He deserved a death on the battlefield as an old man with his sword in hand, you know, ready to fight his way into Valhalla. And yeah, it's really sad and nobody else is very upset about it. Like, Knut is super ready to move on and assume leadership with Bloodhair. And Bloodhair actually accuses Brita of being the one to kill him, which is absurd.
God, okay, this dude. It's like, you're willing to risk it all to, like, bang a white girl with dreads.
Ugh.
Like, you're the one who's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs here, not Brita.
Right.
Okay, just because she shows
emotion.
Her lover, of course,
who is dead. Like, come on.
Anytime a woman shows just a hint of emotion, like, that word crazy comes out. And, of course, it's followed by bitch because he's just an asshole.
Right.
Like you kill horses and you women, like, horses. On the reg, okay? You're the crazy one.
Right. Yeah. I kind of wonder, you know, nobody suspects Athelwald is the one who did it. Like, nobody looked around that
camp.
Why
would you?
Right. Why would you? So I wonder if he sort of sees that as a good thing since they don't know, or if it's kind of a blow to his pride in a way, you know, that nobody thought that he would be the one to do it.
I think he's, like, skeezy enough to be like, ha ha ha. Like,
yeah.
I, you know what I mean? Like, they don't know that it was me. They never suspect it was me. And I did this. Like, I think he's probably pretty pleased with himself at this point. I feel like maybe the longer this goes on and the more divisive this camp becomes, mm-hmm. because you know that Canute and Bloodhair and Heston are not going to all get along and, like, decide, yeah,
absolutely
just one
not.
Of us will lead.
Yeah.
I think that's when he'll start showing, like, hey, I actually did all of this, so it should be, you know what I mean? I feel like that's when his ego will get the better of him a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But right now he seems, I mean, just the way he reacts and interacts with Brita after it's all said and done, like, you know, saying what a great man Ragnar was and, like, offering his condolences. It's just so kind of self-satisfying. Like, he's just so pleased with himself, and yeah, I just cannot stand him. And so, you know, of course, no one knows who did it. They assume that it's the woman that Ragnar was with that night who, you know, killed him, and then he
even
killed
though,
her.
Even though that it doesn't make any sense.
Like, no sense.
That, like, the blade in her belly was obviously put there by somebody else. So, like, did she stab the ever-loving shit out of Ragnar? He stabs her, and then he falls back into his bloody bed? No, it doesn't make any sense.
Look, we need an episode of Bones.
Yes.
To investigate the case.
Bones, Sherlock, Hannibal, like, somebody come and, like, look at this murder scene because
medieval
it's not...
CSI.
Right, it's not adding up.
Yeah,
it's awful. It's awful.
So Brita's left kind of trying to figure out who did it.
I hate it when Brita is left on her own without anybody at her back. Like, she needs the buddy system. Somebody needs to look out for her. Like, yes, she can handle it, but I like it when she doesn't have to. You know what I mean?
I know. Well, unfortunately, you know, Uhtred, who probably would have her back, is off at Ethelflaed's estate.
Flirting in a barn again. Oh, yeah.
I mean, something about those stables, girl. You tell me, Alyssa. I guess horses get people to
listen. I like that the mythology of my being a horse girl has really, like, woven itself into almost every episode of this podcast, because I have not ridden a horse since I was 13 years old.
I just assume you're, like, Kendall Jenner over here, like, just going to the riding, you know,
yeah,
the riding
I
houses.
Wish.
Whatever. I don't know
the
what the
riding
term is.
Houses, you mean a stable?
What is it? the courses?
Yeah.
Are there?
Not, okay, not in a long time. But yes, once a horse girl, always a horse girl.
Always a horse girl. And
I
you
think
can
Athelflaed,
escape them in the show.
Athelflaed is definitely a horse girl. Like, she likes to corner Uhtred in a barn. Like, you know, he starts explaining, you know, how you win your men's trust and expect them to follow, and that it's not a game, it's how you live your life and all this stuff. And Athelflaed finds his sense of honor real sexy, so she's, like, all up in his face again, almost kissing, not quite, which I don't hate. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely shoots her shot.
She's DTF, like, full on, she's ready to go.
For sure. And, of course, you know, Uhtred is... Okay, so Uhtred may have started off this series as, like, a horn dog.
Right.
But he has really matured into a very honorable man.
Right.
And he knows, like, he tells her this. He's like, I would definitely enjoy getting down with you, but I would also, like, immediately regret it, which has to sting to hear, but it also makes total sense because, you know, this is just another instance of Athelflaed choosing a man that she cannot be with.
Right. And at the same time, they're also in very different parts of their, like, grieving process. Like, Eric died about 5 years ago. Cannot speak. But Gisela died pretty recently. So
yeah, it's fresh.
It's still a fresh wound there. So he's not quite as ready. He hasn't had the time that Ethelflaed has to sort of grieve and move on. So it's just not the time.
Here's my thing, though. And it's something that I wish she would have kind of said more clearly for him.
Mm.
It's obvious to me that Ethelflaed is not looking for a life partner right now.
Right.
Like, she just wants a side piece. And I feel like Uhtred and his dirtbag undercut just, like, fits screams no string attached.
Right. She's like, not looking for a new husband, Uhtred. Let's be real.
Let's just bone in this stable.
Right.
Yeah.
She's had that hot goss with Gisela. She knows he's good at what he does, and she wants a piece, but it's not the time.
Cannot blame the girl.
He brings up Skade, and the sexual tension is gone. She's still ruining his life, and in more ways than one. So, Ethelflaed's heading out to go meet up with her dad and with her husband, neither of whom really have her best interests at heart, but especially not her husband, who's trying to kill her. she's going to rat out Heston, who also wants to kill her.
God, she's such a queen. She quickly pivots from this kind of, like, rejection, in their personal relationship, mm-hmm. to be like, Uhtred, like, I can offer you a way to end all of this.
Yeah.
You know, your main concern right now is dealing with Skade. I get it. Here's how you do it.
Use
come
his
with
armor.
Me to see my dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Use the army.
Use
recover
his
Skade.
Army. Exactly. Like, you take out Heston, which is good for my dad.
Right.
And then you get Skade, which is good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe all of this can be resolved. And, I mean, it's not a bad plan.
Yeah, it's not. She's really, I'm so proud of the woman that Ethelflaed has grown to be. She's so good at like the tactical stuff and making honorable choices, but also politically advantageous ones, which is a really tough line to walk.
My father will forgive you, and you will lead his men against Beanfliot.
I do not want his forgiveness.
Then use his army. Use his men. And recover Skade.
They go to Alfred's. Or no, they don't go to Alfred's yet, do they? No, Brita's got to show up first.
Yes, Brita comes first. I can't believe I forgot this because it was so sad.
It
was so sad.
It's
maybe
really
that's
sad.
Why.
Blocked
this part out because it's too
painful.
Much. Brita rides up and, you know, basically kind of drags Uhtred through the mud, tells him that Ragnar's dead, it's all his fault.
Yeah.
He didn't go to Valhalla,
also,
he didn't die with honor.
Also, she buried Ragnar in a very shallow grave. Rewatching that, I'm like, bury him deeper than that. The animals are gonna find him. Please.
We have some, like, very dark thoughts.
Listen. He's buried
but
by...
But you know what? We've seen enough.
Right. He's buried by a water source. The animals are gonna find him.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So,
it's really
sad. I'm hoping,
sad.
Like, maybe she's gonna come back to... I don't know. That can't be his final resting place.
No.
Like, why is he being buried? He should be burned.
Well, he's not in Valhalla, so he can't. She goes to Uhtred. It's all very upsetting. She tells him there was no honor in his death and that wasn't what he deserved. And you were his brother and it's all bullshit. And she basically blames him. You know, you weren't there. You left him and he died. So it's your fault. This is on you.
It's hard. I mean, I can't fault her for her anger and her sense of betrayal. You know, I don't think that Uhtred... I don't know if Uhtred would have been able to prevent Ragnar's death.
He probably wouldn't, but I think she's just lashing out at him as an easy target at this point.
Look, and if she needs to use Uhtred as her punching bag, then that's what she gets to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I won't deny Brita anything, and she's been through a lot. It hits Uhtred pretty hard.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he obviously is looking for someone to blame as well, and he blames Skade. And shockingly, I thought this was, like, really interesting. It's Finnan who kind of comes up and speaks some sense into him, saying, like, man, that's just life. Like, death comes for all of us, you know, especially when we're living in these medieval times, this ninth century life, bro, you know, it's not the best.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Uhtred doesn't listen to that. Obviously, he's kind of got his blinders on and he wants to blame Skade for all of his problems. But that felt like a really nice kind of way to remind him, like, and to remind us that, yes, like, we're making Skate out to be the main villain, and she is a bad guy, and she needs to be dealt with, but a lot of these things that are happening are, you know, consequences of choices that have been made by Uhtred and by other people. It's not necessarily, you know, some mystical curse that's just fallen over the land.
Yeah, I think the way that they're sort of vacillating in how much power they give Skade's curse is really telling. Like, if there's an answer, like an easy answer to something, oh, this curse doesn't have a lot of weight. But if there's not a reason for something, they're like, all right, curse is here, we got to take rid of it.
The curse is back, y'all.
Right. So I think you're right. Like, it shows a lot of growth and a lot of sensibility on Finan's part for him to sort of point out that that's just life when you're at war. So, but that doesn't make it any easier. And Skade is an easy person to dislike and blame because she's super gross. And I think her interplay with Heston is just really gross, and they kind of deserve each other.
Okay, so I wanted to just say, okay, yeah, their whole interaction is disgusting.
Yeah, but every time.
Props to Skade, because Heston is such a pig.
Yeah.
He would be happy to kind of just rape her and be done with it. Ugh. And she kind of knows that. And so she manages him in a really gross, you know, disgusting way. But she does manage him and, teases like, you know, I'll give you my power once you earn me. I'm hoping give you my power is like medieval slang for like, I'm going to give you a really nasty STD or something. But...
yeah,
I don't know. I respected that she was able to kind of control him a little bit.
Well, I think that's kind of her real power, right? Is her ability to sort of manage these men that come to claim her, because they always start, you know, being in the position of power, and she manages to flip that dynamic. So while I'm not a Skade fan, I do appreciate that aspect of her character and sort of the dynamic that she brings to the show. Because it is interesting for me to see how she manages to sort of subvert expectations, especially the expectations of these men who think that they'll be able to just claim her and own her and whatever. And she always gets the upper hand.
Yeah, I mean, you got to respect that game, especially in medieval times when it's like we see other women that are doing well. And it's women like Ethelfled who is kind of propped up and made to be this like.
But she's a position of a lot of privilege, too. Like, she's the queen, the king's daughter. So obviously people are going to be more willing to listen to her. And we don't know anything about Skade's background, but I'm assuming she's not a princess. So she's had to sort of claw her way to the top with what she's got. And so I respect it. I don't like her, but I respect it. So that's the sign of a good villain, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. she can go ahead and like just keep getting down with Heston. Ethelflaed and Uhtred are riding into Alfred's camp.
Yeah.
Ethelred is obviously kind of squirming.
Not happy to see his wife.
Yeah, really unhappy to see her alive and to see her with Uhtred. It terrifies him. Mm-hmm. And of course, Ethelflaed, just the queen that she is rides up and is like, you know, I want to talk to my dad. And he's like, well, why can't you say whatever you have to say to your husband? And she comes back with, I wish to talk of treachery and traitors. And I'm just like, oh, that's how I hope to like open a dinner toast one day. Like, can you imagine the drama of it? Like, to treachery and traitors, and have everyone just suspect everyone else of something.
Yeah, I think using to treachery and traitors is a really great new gender neutral way to start a conversation with your friends. So
I think so as well.
Yeah, let's do it.
Mix it up,
let's
you guys.
Do it. Yeah, I
your next dinner party.
Thank you for coming to treachery and traitors.
And traitor.
Yeah, I love seeing her like roll up and give Athelred the business right away and like demand to see her dad. And I love like how well she fits in with the Cookham crew. Mm-hmm. And she fits in with this little band of outlaws so well. And I love to see it.
She's a rebel at heart.
I think
that's why she gets along with them.
She is. She's not afraid to fight. She's not afraid to demand what she wants. It's all a great combination. But yeah, like you said, Athelred is super nervous. He's nervous that Ethelflaed got away. He's nervous that she found Uhtred. And he's pretty sure that she knew that he was trying to kill her, which, yeah, she was.
Again, okay, if you're going to scheme to kill someone, like, man up. Own up to it. Mm. Like, if you're going to be evil, just be evil. Like, if you have made this plan, you should kind of prepare yourself in case people find out in case it doesn't go well. Like, I don't understand this lack of planning on the bad guy's part in this show. Like, you know, Ethelred seems very surprised that his wife would find out and that she wasn't killed and that Uhtred would come save her. Like, come on, dude.
I think there's a lot of desperation in everybody's plan on this show. Like, it's such a brutal time to be alive, and there's so much changing leadership that I think a lot of plans are made on the fly. But yeah, I think Athelred is really, he's not paying attention to what's right in front of him, which is that Aldhelm is super sick of his shit and he like stuck his neck out to help Ethelfled.
God, every time Ethelred like complains about Ethelfled or is, you know, worried about like, oh, what is she doing now? You can just see Aldhelm just like inwardly rolling his eyes. Like it's gotten to be too much for the dude. And I'm just waiting for him to like stab Ethelred in the back. I would totally cheer that on.
100%. Yeah, so they roll up and there's an approximation to a Witten, which is almost a Witten, but not quite. And yeah, so they go in expecting to see Alfred to make their case, but he's not there. Edward is, which in a way is a good thing because Edward is definitely more open to their cause, but in most ways is a bad thing because Edward really has no power here.
Yeah, Ethelred has taken up that throne chair, looks pretty comfortable in it, and he's making all kinds of accusations to hide his own, you know, treason, kind of implying, he has his men imply that Uhtred might be a spy, that he might have organized this whole thing with Heston trying to get Ethelfled, you know, all of these just like off the wall theories that, of course, you know, Ethelfled and Edward are like, why would he do that? That makes no sense. And it's kind of, I feel like even though Alfred is in no way Uhtred's savior at this point, I feel like it is a good thing that he eventually turns up to this Witten, because it could have like really, it could have gone downhill fast if it had been all up to Ethelred.
Yeah. And, you know, Alfred, Alfred gets so close sometimes to really understanding Uhtred, but he always pulls back at the last minute. So you can almost tell that he's like thinking about listening to him. And in a way, he's glad that he's back because he does know, even if he'll never admit it, Uhtred is really integral to his king building. And, you know, Uhtred tells him that they need to draw out Heston and they need to get rid of Heston, or, you know, the Danes are going to come and they're going to be bigger than ever. Like, Canute and Bloodhair will eventually meet up with him and they'll be this big, unstoppable army. So they need to draw Heston out of Bamfleot and they need to get rid of him once and for all. Alfred, of course, has to remind him, you're an outlaw, so I'm not going to listen to you. And he doesn't think that this is a good plan because he doesn't want to waste any men. But he doesn't quite grasp that they're not going to survive a giant battle. So they need to pick a smaller one in order to prevent the bigger one.
Yeah, I think this is a case of, you know, Alfred has done well with every other big meeting between, you know, his army and the Danes. And he feels like it's a little bit, he's a little too comfortable.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been here before. He thinks he knows how to handle it, but he doesn't have Uhtred. He's got different warlords that are banding together. That's never happened before. I mean, it's just not the same and he can't see that. And so, you know, it's not surprising that he denies Uhtred's request to, you know, take 1,000 men and go confront Heston and hopefully cut off, a arm of this army. I don't think it's the best move. I mean, the dude is like a walking corpse at this point. So I don't think like expending more energy arguing with Uhtred is like the right choice. Like, just give him the men and go lay down, take a nap.
Please. You can barely get on your horse right now, Alfred. You're not ready to lead an army.
The chainmail is too heavy for you, and that's without, like, the headpiece that you have to put on.
Right.
Like,
so
sit down.
Yeah, it doesn't go well. Edward knows that it doesn't go well, and he kind of goes behind his dad's back in a way because he wants to talk to Uhtred for real and give him hope. So he goes to Beaca and Father Peerleg, and they're like, all right, we're going to take you to Uhtred, but we're going to do this in clear sight because we don't want it to look like you're sneaking around. So, yeah, he, like, goes to hang out with his sister, who's hanging out with a Kokum crew. It's all really cute. He calls her my sister the outlaw. It's nice.
Adorable.
And, you know, through this interaction, you can see that Edward really trusts Uhtred, but he barely knows, like, what kinds of questions he needs to be asking. So in a way, he's like taking this step and making a decision to see Uhtred's value, which is great and a good sign of what kind of king he's going to be. But then everything else is just a sign that he's not ready, like, at all.
Draw Heston out of the fort. Our army will be hidden in the woods waiting. You have my word.
Yeah, so I feel like with Edward, he has good instincts, right? Like, he knows that Uhtred is a trustworthy dude. He's proven that. And he's not too kind of prideful to see it like Alfred is.
Right.
And he also, he is someone who's capable of a little bit of self-reflection. He knows that he's not ready to be a king. And he's certainly not ready to deal with the fallout of this great battle between, you know, the Saxons and the Danes. He knows that his dad is too sick to really lead the men to a victory. Like, it's not going to end well. And I think those instincts are spot on. I think he really relies on other men like Bjelke and Peerling and Uhtred to fill in the blanks and like actually form a battle plan.
He knows who to trust.
Yeah, he knows who to trust. That's like 50% of being a good king is like knowing who to trust and who to back. You know what I mean? So like he's on his way.
Yeah. Also on
I have hope for the baby.
Yeah, he'll get there maybe if he lives long enough.
We'll see.
But yeah, so he's kind of, you know, stepping up, and also stepping up to those who are threatening her is Æthelflaed. I love the scene with her and Æthelred, and where he's being a bitch and she stabs the table and threatens him, and it's really great.
Oh my God, that knife play.
Yeah. Ugh,
just effortless. Like, she's able to really put him on his back foot and threaten him without threatening him. It's such a fun scene. I have to think that they had a great time shooting it because there's so many sly digs and there's, it's
all the just backhanded.
So
yes. Everything is, I love it. But yeah, you know, she lets him know what she's doing. She's like, all right, I've assigned Uhtred to my guard and I'm going to ride out with you and my dad. And you're not going to kill me. And she points out that, shockingly, he didn't seem surprised or concerned with the information that Heston tried to kill her. And wouldn't you know it, Æthelred's a shit about that, too.
Yeah. So, okay, you know, props to, like, Toby Ragboat.
I know you
does
love
such a good
him.
Job of
it's
playing.
Okay.
He does such a good job of playing this, like, shitty character. And I hate Æthelred. But I like seeing the sparring between him and Æthelflaed because I feel
so
like
compelling.
This is a woman that is like so high above him. He's no match for her. And so he has to kind of resort to physical intimidation to kind of wield this power over her. And that's not going to last long either, bro, because Steoppa taught her how to fight. Like,
yeah, he did.
If she had to scrap, like, she could scrap. You know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. She could beat him in a fight. I totally believe that. So, yeah, they're doing their dance of the fucked up marriage. And Edward gets in trouble with his dad. And, you know, he kind of attempts to stand up to his father. But Alfred really, like, beats him down. And
God, it was hard to watch. It was so abusive.
It's really upsetting. A lot of the interactions in this episode were upsetting. And I, you know, it was interesting to me because at one point Alfred tells him, you should have approached me. But at the same time, you know, every single time that Edward has come to him with anything, he's refused to listen. All he's done is point out what he's doing wrong. So, like, he doesn't have that level of trust with Edward that he would approach him with anything. I don't understand why he thinks that he's earned that.
Look, it's weird, like, because I feel like everything that Alfred is trying to teach Edward, which is to man up, to take responsibility, to make your own decisions. Mm-hmm. It's what he gets pissed at him for when he actually does it. You know, it's like Edward has made a decision. He's chosen a side. He comes to tell his dad about it. And Alfred is so upset that he didn't ask him or consult him first. But that's not what a king would do. A king would just make the decision and commit to it. And so I think it's an interesting, it starts off pretty bad. I think Alfred is so tough on Edward and kind of implies that he might never be ready to be king. And there's just like a lot of resentment and disappointment between them.
Right.
But it's interesting when he leaves, he dismisses Edward. He kind of has this moment with Bjelke where he's like, is it right to be so angry and also like kind of proud?
Sure.
And that's what it's like, not just to raise like a king, but to raise kids, you know, like where they're meant to challenge you and maybe like buck your authority and figure things out for themselves. And that's what Edward is doing. I just think it probably doesn't help that he's doing it with Uhtred.
Yeah, I think the biggest sticking point for Alfred is that he's doing it with Uhtred and not with him. So, right. But he gave Uhtred his word, and he's not going to make Edward break it. So they are going to send the men with Uhtred, like Edward promised. They are going to go, and they're going to follow him to Heston's. So they're marching to Bamfleot. They send the scout to Heston to tell him that they're coming, and it's on.
I am no coward, Dane Slayer! If death is what you want, then you shall have it!
It is so on. So Uhtred kind of rides up with his Cuckum crew. Finnan's over here, like, sitting on a shield, like a cocky little shit. Uhtred kind of just, like, insults the hell out of Heston, saying, like,
it's,
you know,
so
you're going to be remembered as a coward.
It's so easy to goad Heston. It's what a child. It's so easy to goad him into anger.
Men, I mean, they have such long periods of, like, inactivity. Like, they don't have a lot to do in these times.
They're always
so, like,
ready
nursing,
for a fight.
Yeah, nursing grudges and, like, building up your own egos. Like, ego is basically all you have.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's so easy to manipulate Heston and basically call him a coward. And, of course, you know, we're going to have songs written about how, you know, scared shitless you were of Uhtred and his, like, crew of 30 men. And, yeah, I kind of appreciated in all of this. So Alexander Draiman, who plays Uhtred, has a very, like, interesting accent. I'd love to hear him talk.
Yeah.
But I feel like this part where he's, like, kind of insulting Heston, like, really made me see that he could have such a great career as, like, a late-in-life, like, audiobook narrator.
Oh,
like,
I would listen to him read a book all day.
Yeah, I feel like that's something he should explore, should acting, you know, start to bore him, because it's just so fun to listen to him, like, goad Heston on in this scene.
Yeah.
And it works, and it works maybe a little too well.
Yeah, so they sort of run to this freezing field. It seems pretty miserable. It takes Heston like half a day to catch up with them. They're starting to wonder if he's even going to come. There's this really funny moment where Finnan says maybe he's afraid of the priest, and you see Osford's little smile. I love the interplay between this group, because you can tell that there's just such an established relationship there between all of them. And I love to see it.
Yeah, but it also terrifies me.
I know. I get so attached.
I know. And I'm like, Jessica, don't do this. Like, you know better. You've seen these shows before.
Everybody's gonna die. It's fine.
Don't give your heart away like this.
I know, but I can't help it. I love them all. I love them all. But yeah, so Heston's army does show up. They completely surround this small group, and it's real bad. Alfred,
this is the most scared I've been.
Yes.
When it comes to, like, a battle.
Yes, because it's awful, because Alfred and his army, they're there. They're like a stone's throw away, but they're keeping back in the woods, and he's not going to help him. He brought him all the way out here, and he's going to make Edward make the call. And
right.
It's a very violent lesson to teach him.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, they surround Uhtred and his men, and that battle, like, gets underway. It's not like we're just kind of in a tense standoff waiting for Edward to decide. Like, they're fighting for their lives. There are moments where it's like, you know, Sitrick or Osfrith, like, they get into some scraps. You're not sure. Like, it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Alfred's over here up on his horse, like, you know, we're going to wait. We're going to
wait.
What are you going to do about it, boy?
Yeah.
Like, and so a part of me is like, he's getting a lot of satisfaction of knowing that he's the one that could save Uhtred this time.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's always been the other way around. So there's that. But I think a big part of this was, you know, let's see, like, Edward made this decision. He was man enough to kind of commit himself. Let's see what he does with this, because I'm not going to be around much longer. This chainmail is already, like, weighing me down into the grave. Let's see, like, what he can do. And that's kind of where we end.
Yeah. It's a real scary cut to black. And I've never been more thankful that this is a streaming show and not a week to week because it would be devastating to have to wait a week.
I couldn't deal with it.
It'd be awful.
That cliffhanger, it's terrible. I have a lot of faith in Edward, but I just don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still a boy.
He's so young and so green.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
It's time for our next episode wishes. This is when we issue our demands for upcoming episodes like the spoiled toddlers that we are. Here's what we want to see, when we want to see it, and why we won't be denied. Alyssa, I feel like we have to want the same thing, which is to find out what the hell happens next.
Yeah, like Alfred allowing this many men to die as an object lesson to teach his son to man up is a really bad look. So I'm hoping that Edward like really steps it up. Like he's so green and he has so much to learn. So this decision and the subsequent battle, you know, if he makes the right choice, could make or break him. I mostly want someone, though, just like anyone, to do right by Uhtred. Like, he's broken with the Danes and gotten news of his brother's death, so he's feeling super adrift right now. And I just want someone in a position of power to sort of reach out to him and be like, hey, buddy, you're great. Let me help you make some good. Let me help some good things happen for you. And
like write him a little like a little love note.
Right.
Like you're doing good, buddy.
You're doing your best. And I know that won't happen. But if anybody deserves like a little help in this moment, it's Uhtred. So yeah, Edward, come on, step it up.
Come on, Edward. Yeah, I feel like you know it's Alfred's reliable in his decision making at this point. He's doing the smart thing, which is seeing if Uhtred and Heston can kind of destroy each other. It's not going to happen. Heston is like has so outnumbered Uhtred. It's going to be a slaughter.
Yeah.
And I think that Alfred is fine seeing that, too, because he's got this kind of petty, you know, grudge against Uhtred. So he's going to do what's good for him. Mm-hmm. I think what's up in the air is what Edward will do. I think he's got that promise and he's pretty committed to the kind of person he wants to be. I think he feels a sense of duty towards Uhtred. This is someone who's like helped raise him, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I kind of want to just see him usurp his dad's authority for once and become a damn man.
Yeah.
And I'd really like to see Uhtred kind of cut that beard jewelry off Heston's smug face. But, you know, one thing at a time, I guess.
One thing at a time, but I feel like they can get those two things done. Like,
yeah,
just these two little things.
Two small things before the series is done, that's all I ask.
So The Last Kingdom has a massive cast of interesting characters, and nearly everyone gets their time to shine. Our arsling of the episode is the character who truly goes above and beyond to win the war or simply win our hearts. Jessica, who was your arsling this episode?
So I'm going to have to give Edward a much-deserved shout-out this episode. Mm. I think he made a bad first impression.
Yeah.
You know, not going to lie. Like, pining over pregnant girlfriends and, you know, whining about the burden of being king. Like, not a good look. But he stepped up to the plate this episode. He stuck his neck out for Uhtred. He stood up to his dad. He bonded with his sister. And I think you get the sense by the end of the episode that he's kind of come into his own a bit. And I appreciate that. Like, he's young and inexperienced, but he's got a lot of passion. And I think that that's promising. You know, I'd much rather have that than Alfred at this point. So,
yeah, I get it. I'm going to go with Alfred's other offspring and go with Aethelflaed. This season, she's just, like I said earlier, like she's just come into her own so beautifully as a woman and as a leader. And this episode is like, it's a prime example of how far she's come. Like, she's sticking by Uhtred's side. She's standing up to her dad. Alfred just must be having a really hard time because both of his kids are like, screw your dad. We can do this better Yikes. Than you at this point.
You're already like basically dead. Right, so we're going to do our own thing.
Yeah. Bye. but yeah, like she's standing up to her dad. She's encouraging Edward to be his own man and to sort of grow into his kingship. She's stabbing Aethelred metaphorically and the table literally, like, you know, Lady of Mercia has established herself as a major player and you just love to see it.
Get ready to shame none, the worst character of the episode with us. It doesn't matter if you're a Saxon or a Dane. Anyone can be a turd, and we're calling out the biggest one of the episode. So, Alyssa, so many choices.
A lot of choices.
Who's your pick?
Okay, I'm going to go with the dynamic duo of this episode, Skade and Heston. There are people that are probably worse. Aethelred and Alfred come to mind. But these two are just so gross together. All their talk of like taking power from everybody with not so veiled sexual metaphors was just the worst to watch. And honestly, they kind of deserve each other. You know, like they're both prone to exaggerating their own power and their influence, especially the influence that they have of people with more power than them. And at the same time, they tend to let other people do their dirty work. So these are two peas in a rotten pod, and I'm ready for them both to go down.
Yeah, if I could, like, not have another scene where they're kind of scheming over their, like, stew, that would do my stomach so well.
Talking about how they're going to do each other, but neither of them are going to like it, but they're probably going to do it anyway. And I'm just like,
God,
I'm over it. I'm over
not
it.
Not over my soup, Skate. well, okay, I think I'm going to pour a glass of Haterade in Aethelred's honor this episode.
A worthy choice.
Thank you. Thank you. He's the absolute worst. I mean, he plans to kill his wife. He moans when she shows up alive with her side piece in tow. You know, he throws an impromptu witten to accuse Uhtred of being a spy. He's a shitbag to Aethelflaed.
Yeah.
But he's also just so terrified of her at the same time. So it's like,
I can't even
respect the evil, you know, plotting that he's doing because he's just, you know, such a spineless worm. And he's still about that hawk life. I'm really tired of seeing that, like, that hawk.
He's, yeah.
Up, like, on his shoulder. It's so annoying. I mean, I guess, like, he's consistent. Like,
I think he's overcompensating. Like, that hawk is a metaphor.
I guess I don't want to dig into it, but you're probably right. yeah, I think the only nice thing I'll ever say about this dude is that he's consistently a piece of shit.
Right, so. And he has great cheekbones, but everything else is pretty terrible.
He's got pretty curls. Mm,
but he's the worst.
But those curls hide his evilness.
Curls of evil!
That's why his hair is so big.
Exactly.
It's full of secrets.
Now, this is clearly a very serious podcast about a very serious show, but sometimes it's nice to indulge in a little thirst. It's 2019, the world is on fire, and honestly, we deserve this. So this is our time to celebrate the thirstiest moments that really blew our skirts up this episode. I'm just going to say it, season 3, not very horny.
Not the best.
Yeah.
don't count
on this. In this regard.
For any of, like, your spank bank stuff, you know, because there's nothing here. There's some breath-holding moments, you know, like in the stable between Aethelflaed and Uhtred. No bodice ripping, though, in this episode. Like, I get it. You know, war's happening. Mm. We gotta get serious. Not the ideal time to get it on. So I guess we're just gonna have to be content with Finnan, who always provides a bit of sass.
Yes, love it.
Love when he kind of bows up to Steoppa and, you know, makes a joke about his weaponry. Like, normally, like, a dude, like, equating his genitals to some form of weapon is, like, not a turn on. But
if you do it in an Irish accent, I can get past that.
Anything can be.
Right.
Yeah.
And take out your cock.
And if you mistake it for a weapon, what then?
if you say anything in a cocky Irish accent, I'll appreciate it. Yeah. So I feel like we should clarify, though, because I feel like Finnan has been like a recurring shout out in these segments. That's, he's been our only hope.
Fair. We're, yeah, that's fair.
I think we should clarify that, you know, the actor who plays Finnan, Mark Rowley, is lovely and talented, and he brings it every episode. The show's very lucky to have him. And I'm done now. So we can objectify and appreciate talent because we're women and we're multitaskers.
There you go.
So there you go.
There you go. You added a little feminist twist to our thirst. Yeah. I appreciate that.
You know what? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We can be respectful and thirsty at the same time.
100%. Okay, so I was raised on a steady diet of period dramas, so the longing glances and almost kisses and repressed emotions is coded into my romance DNA.
In your veins.
In my veins. Like, that is the shit that I do like. So is it bad that I've, like, pretty quickly moved on from Eric and Gisela to be pretty fully aboard the Athelflaed and Uhtred train? Because I am.
I think that's totally fine. This is medieval times.
Right.
This is how you live. Go with it.
Yeah. Like, I had some trouble getting past the age difference because she was a literal child when they met, but I'm over it.
Don't think about that.
Right. It's fine.
It's in the past.
Right. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter anymore. They're both adults. And dare I say I ship it? Kind of.
I mean, what else do we have at the moment?
I know.
We've got to have something.
Right. But, like,
don't make us feel bad about this.
Yeah, I need a little bit of romance. I just do.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I think Eric and Gisela would totally understand. They'd want us all to be happy.
Yes, all of us.
So yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I think it's safe to say that we've never been accused of being unenthusiastic in our fandom. We annoy our friends, our family, and now you, our devoted listeners. Welcome to Geek Out, where we will offer up our humble suggestions about what we think you should be watching and reading. So,
okay, so it's time. This one is more of we got to talk about it than a full-throated suggestion of what people should be watching. Although I will say, I liked this movie. I did.
Okay, thank you. Yes, agreed. I mean,
okay, first of all,
we can address the bad things, but I did like it.
Right. Okay, so we're talking about Last Christmas. The new sort of rom-com. It's being marketed as a rom-com, but I probably wouldn't classify it as one.
Yeah.
Starring Emilia Clarke, who is delightful, and Henry Golding, who is also delightful.
And delightful to look at.
Yeah, like, it's one of those things that I think, yes, this script had some problems and the twist was weird, but, like, I could watch these two charming motherfuckers dance around London for hours. So I'm not going to complain if it's not an Oscar-worthy film. I had a good time.
Look, I didn't go into the theater thinking that this was going to, like, you know, blow my socks off. You know what I mean?
Like, I knew what it was. I want to be cozy. I want to cry a little bit. I want to be uplifted. And it did that.
Yeah, I think it hit all the marks. I think it's kind of clunky and
but I do want to talk
weird
about
choices.
Yes, I do want to talk about the twist, though, because, OK, so if you haven't seen Last Christmas and you don't want to be spoiled, even though the trailer basically gives it away, turn it off I now. Mean, thank you for listening. But so he's dead and sure. Is her heart donor.
Yes. Which,
but they never really clarify. Is he a ghost? Is he a guardian angel? Is she a figment? Right. Is she, like, losing her mind? And this is, like, a Tyler Durden situation? Like, they didn't clarify, and that's fine, but it's going to bother me for a while.
Look, this film would have been infinitely more interesting if it had been Fight Club, but Christmas time.
Yes.
Like, if she was in a Tyler Durden situation and, like, the whole movie, it was, like, fuzzy and happy. And then the last third, we kind of just went to this dark place of, like, she's, like, talking to herself and imagining things.
You know, we kind of had that moment where we, like,
but
see
we don't
scenes.
Dive into it.
Right. We just kind of, like, see scenes for, like, how they really happen. And she's by herself, but it's never really explained. Like, is she losing her mind? I don't know. I don't.
Yeah, and it's so weird because they're so cutesy about it. Like, it's just like, oh, ha ha ha, she was skating by herself. She was on a park bench or whatever. And it's
right.
Like, what?
What like,
that's
is going
where I
on?
Like, this woman needs help. Like,
I know.
Mental help.
I know. And so, like, yeah. And That was an interesting choice. And I always kind of like, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I'm a cheese ball. And I always kind of like those movies where it's like her true romance was with herself and she had to figure out her own business. That is a trope that I like. I will say, though, I think the use of homeless people to teach her a lesson made me a little uncomfortable.
Agreed. I mean, it's just
like, yes, like get her out there, like doing good in her community. But I don't know, like they felt more like lessons to be learned than actual
people. Exactly. Yeah.
And so that's been done enough.
Yeah. I don't think we need to keep doing that. I think and I will say, like, obviously this comes from a good place. And I don't think that any of the bad decisions were meant.
It's Emma Thompson and Paul Feig. I trust them.
Yeah, totally. 100% trust them with my lives. And you know what? They made the perfect casting choice putting Emilia Clarke in this because I'd watch her in anything.
Oh, and like after she's had her do all the drama of Game of Thrones, I was so happy to see her like having fun and laughing and having a great time. So like she may not have been properly served by this material, but she killed it. So
yes, and I hope she did have fun getting in that elf costume and filming the shit out of this thing because she deserves it. And so, yeah, I just feel like go into it like realistically. Don't
know that it's
not everything has to be an Oscar, you know, worthy film. Like we can just enjoy things again. Just enjoy things.
And it's basically a Hallmark movie with a great cast and a big budget. But like, it's fine. You'll get to listen to George Michael, who's always delightful to listen to.
Love the music.
You'll walk out uplifted. So, you know what? If you have moderate expectations, you'll have a good time.
You'll be happy. There's the tagline for this movie.
Right. Temper your expectations and you'll be fine.
That's with this movie and that's with life, honestly. So,
so true.
Go see Last Christmas if you want to watch a like fun new Christmas movie.
It's cute. I liked it. I will not be shamed by film Twitter. I enjoyed it. So, yeah, I guess that's it.
I think we're done. I think we've set our piece.
Yes.
Film Twitter knows how we feel about this.
Right.
And we've done our duty.
Yes. All right, guys, if you want to hear more of our bullshitting, check us out on Twitter or over at Sci-Fi Wire Fangirls. Also, don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave us a nice review wherever you get your podcasts.
Until next time, destiny is all, bitches.